Hi, today is July 29th, 2017, and this is Mobile Cat Podcast number 215, where at some point during the podcast, John and I will say farewell to the iPad Nano and Shuffle. But first,
I didn't know we were going to have an official ceremony. I didn't dress accordingly, but...
Say that again?
I didn't know we were having an official ceremony. It's not like I don't have a eulogy prepared. I guess I'll just wing it.
Hang on. Skype decided to... and this is appropriate because one of the things I wanted to talk about was my continuing adventure with a Blue Yeti microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And right now it has decided... Wow, the speakers are not in the right place. Well, let's see. Can you say something, John?
Sure. I will talk for a few seconds, and hopefully you'll hear something out of that, maybe.
Okay, so what I've done is move my microphone. So this is... Okay, since this is the topic, I'll just start talking about this. So... So I got the Blue Yeti microphone to replace my Blue Snowball, which I've used for several years now. Last week, and John and I used it for the... Well, I used it for the first time to record with John last week. It's the first time I used it, period, really, to record a podcast. And there are a bunch of issues, including John not being able to hear me at some point, and I not being able to hear John at some point. And in fact, just now what I had to do was it started off okay, and then John's audio dropped off, and I had to switch from the microphone output on the Blue Yeti, which has its own microphone output, and move it to the headphone output, and move the headphone back to plugged into my MacBook Air, where I can now hear John again. And hopefully I'm actually recording using the microphone. It's not always... I'm looking at the preferences, and it says using a USB advanced audio device. And that's kind of odd because, you know, usually the Mac is pretty smart, and it will actually know the name of the device you're using. Like, I think it says Blue Snowball when I use the Snowball with this thing.
Well, I think because the Blue Yeti has the audio in through the microphone and then also an audio out, it does something more... complex with USB core audio than just a microphone. So that might be why it doesn't have an exact name for it, because it's a combo device that does both input and output.
Yeah. So at any rate, I'm just using it as a microphone, as you know, was intended by me. I should note that nothing's wrong with a Blue Snowball, except it is so gigantic because it takes up so much square inches on the desktop that I can barely access my MacBook Air when it's sitting in front of me. I don't have it on... I have it on a stand. Well, the built-in tripod it comes with, which is huge. I don't have one of those boom mic things next to me, which would probably solve that, but it was probably actually cheaper just to buy a new microphone. And plus, I always wanted a Blue Yeti because I'd heard such good things about it, except from John, whose Blue Yeti is not compatible with Mac OS.
Yeah, so you'd heard good things from other people.
Other people. But in any case, it is taller, as I said last week, so I don't have to hunch down quite as much when I record a podcast, which is nice. It's also tiltable, which the Blue Yeti Blue Snowball kind of was, but not obvious. So hopefully I'm a little clearer.
Well, it looks way more official, like a podcaster microphone.
That's right. It's an official podcast look to it, so that's pretty cool.
Look like an old-time radio host.
Exactly. Anyway, so... I'm continuing to play with this Blue Yeti to see if it will work out okay. Hope it does, because it's kind of expensive, you know, as microphones go. Well, for me, you know, I know professional microphones cost a lot more, but, you know, for a rank amateur like myself, doing something for fun, it was an investment that I was hesitant to make, let me put it that way.
Since the trouble it's giving you.
Yeah. Anyway, the other topic is our headline topic, and that's saying goodbye to the iPod Nano and the iPod Shuffle, the last two iPods without a touchscreen. So the iPod Touch is still around, which is basically an iPhone without a phone. But the old guard line of iPods are gone.
Yeah, it's a sort of bittersweet moment. I think a lot of us in the tech sphere, our first, I suppose, official music device was an iPod, the one that actually got it right. I mean, before that, there were many MP3 players. And
they're all wrong.
I had a Creative Nomad for a long time, which kind of looked cool because it looked like a CD player. But, the iPod was the first one that I got that it seemed to all make sense and work well. And then I had that for a while, and then I had a Zune, which also worked okay, but then Microsoft abandoned it. So I think a lot of us have a soft spot for the classic iPod look. Of course, anyone who's, I'm in my early 30s, as you like to dwell on sometimes when you think about our age difference. But I think people who are about 5 to 10 years younger than me, probably about 10 years younger than me, they've never even known a classic iPod. You know, they kind of grew up and iPod touches were what they wanted. Because they were 7 or 8 when the iPhone came out. So for them, it's, hey, I wanted that iPod Touch. So I guess it's only the guys who are, their late 20s, early 30s and beyond that really have much love lost for the iPod Classic look. Definitely it's not as easy to use as an iPod Touch. So we aren't all pining for the days when we had to do a click and, wheel motion for everything. But
yeah. Actually my daughter who just graduated from college had an iPad. I just keep saying iPad. iPod Nano. I think she still uses one. I mean, she has an iPhone also. But I think until recently, she still kept, a lot of music on her iPod for run. Oh, maybe that's what it is. Maybe she goes running with that thing instead of an iPhone, which I keep telling her, take your iPhone with you in case you need to call for help. But at any rate.
You remind me of a story when the original iPods came out. I have a friend who worked at Best Buy. And he would often see young women who use them when running come in and complain that they had died. And that's because they were using ones that actually had hard drives and they were holding them as they were running. So a repeated shaking motion up and down killed it. And apparently when you would plug them in, iTunes at that time would just give you a frowny face. And that's how you knew that the hard drive was fried.
Yeah. With the iPod Nano, not so much since it's a solid state device. Nice. But yeah, that's right. In fact, I remember when the original iPod came out in 2001, so it's now 16 years old. Yeah, 16 years old this fall. When the original iPod came out, it had a 5 gigabyte. Does that sound right? 5 gigabyte hard drive?
That sounds about right. It was not very big at all. Yeah.
Well, that was considered huge at the time. I mean, you and I were probably still using, 16 megabyte compact flash cards or something in our
I actually PDA. Found some of my old SD cards and, big thing, 64 megabyte SD card.
Yeah. So 5 gigabyte, was huge. And I remember people were tearing it apart and trying to put it, putting it in some kind of, like an enclosure and using it with their computers.
It's very interesting to think about how that also shifted us away from the idea of loading up just the music we wanted to listen to and maybe a few playlists here and there to just loading our entire music library.
Right. Yeah. In fact, when you were talking about your earlier MP3 players, I think the first one I had could maybe fit 20 songs on a good day, depending how long the songs were. So, yeah, the idea of carrying, everything or at least everything you want with you was kind of amazing. And this is also back in the days, for those of you old enough to remember, in the early 2000s, people still had multi-CD players in their cars, often mounted in their trunks so they wouldn't get stolen. And you would load up, 6 to 10 CDs in your multi-CD player, and that's how you'd listen to music while you're on the road.
Yep.
So
that was not my last vehicle, but the vehicle before it. That was how I would get music into it. So
yeah. So do you still have an iPod of any kind or liner? I do. I have two iPod Nanos.
I actually had one, and I gave it to a friend of mine who is a defense contractor and needs something that cannot take pictures and doesn't have Wi-Fi to take into secure locations with him. So he's stuck with you know, an old iPod. That's about the most modern thing he can grab that will work for him.
Wow, that's funny. And, you know, do I still have it? Yeah, I think I have the tall portrait mode looking iPod Nano that had a camera on it. And there was only one model. Next model of Nanos did not was a square, the square ones, which did not have a camera. So I actually have a non-touch iPod with a camera that even takes videos, I think.
Man, time flies so fast with these things. And we just don't even think about it.
Yeah. Any rate, I'm sure there are still people, a lot of people. I think I see an iPod in use every now and then. So, I saw somebody with a portable CD player the other day, which nearly blew my mind.
that would blow my mind. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about emerging technology and things like that. I've been noticing, you talk about seeing people with classic iPods. Mm-hmm. I've been noticing more and more Apple Watches.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure why. I think it's because just a lot of places are putting them on discount now. You can get the first gen and the series one, but it's really interesting to me how many people I see who I would not consider technology aficionados with Apple Watches. Even in a small town like Cleveland, Mississippi, where I am, the electrician that came to repair the lights in my office had one on earlier this week. I was at a grocery store and the cashier had one.
Wow.
So really, it's interesting to me that I think as things kind of ebb and flow, Apple at one time, all you saw were iPods, and now all you see are iPhones, and soon Apple Watches might be more common than we think.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, I see a lot more Apple Watches on civilians, and by civilians, I mean non-techies, than I really expect to see.
Well, I think it's because all of our friends in the blogosphere said that they were going to fail miserably.
Yeah.
I mean, Apple Watches, for the first year and a half they were out, the general consensus was, this is a stupid thing nobody needs, and it's going to fail horribly.
Yeah.
And then it persisted, and then it kind of turned to neutral, and I think soon we're going to see the tide go a little bit more positive. But it still seems like there's a group of technology writers and bloggers and podcasters who just, they don't see a need for it, and they can't understand why anyone else ever would.
There you go. Haters. They're haters.
Yeah. Haters, but I never like the term hater because hater seems to acknowledge that they might know it was useful. I just think they're clueless. But, you know, that's also a bigger insult. I mean, you know, if I call you a hater, then I'm at least acknowledging and respecting your position. If I just figure you're clueless, then
that's no, worse. No respect.
Yeah.
No respect at all. Dirty. Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, because, you know, for a long time, you really only saw MP3 players in the hands of geeks. Because, quite frankly, they're impossible to use.
Yep.
Easily, at least. And then when the iPod came out, and I was one of those people, by the way, I wasn't a hater, but I was one of those people who said, who in the world is going to pay $400 or $500 for an MP3 player? That would be the first iPod. And boy, was I wrong. Because it turned out, not only did it turn out that a whole bunch of people were willing to pay for the iPod, I think it started a whole interest in the Mac itself. Because I think iTunes wasn't available for Windows the first year, so you had to have a Mac. And even after iTunes became available for Windows, the Windows version of iTunes has always been so bad. It's like, well, maybe the Mac version is better. As it turns out, not so much. But and of course, the Mac never caught on and took over the world, but it did get a percentage uptick over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at one point it was the best-selling laptop model or models brand. So of course, the iPod holds a huge place in our personal tech histories as well as the larger scheme of things. Okay.
Very true.
And next, speaking of news of history, I just learned about this the other day. It's a Google newspaper archive. And so if you go to news.google.com/newspapers, you'll get to a website that lists, it's a very plain website. It just lists titles of newspapers. These are old news. I don't know if there are any current ones. So these are like historical ones. For example, the Arizona Weekly Journal Miner, which apparently published from 1893 to 1900, 340 issues. Or I'm kind of going down a bit further. Well, maybe it does have some new ones. But, you know, it has like the Daytona Beach News Journal, 15 issues, all in 1995. A whole bunch of newspapers from outside of the U.S. Who's, so, you know, kind of fun stuff. Haven't really delved into it, but I just noticed the link somewhere, and I clicked on it. Said, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, some of these are very historic, and others are actually modern day. So the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, which is the paper of my wife's hometown, or outside Pittsburgh, PA, has 22,000 issues from 1916 to 2007.
Wow.
So, and I'm just kind of looking at...
Is that newspaper gone now?
No, that paper still is publishing.
Okay, so just literally their archive.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't see anything from Hawaii, which is a little bit disappointing. But, well, that doesn't matter. There's lots of other stuff to look at.
So there's more in the world than just Hawaii.
What? Say what? okay, so anyway, news, what did I say? news.google.com/newspapers. And, you know, it's free. Don't need to log in, anything. Nice.
I will say, if you haven't ever looked at a newspaper archive, they are really fun to sort of go through and read some of the things. One of the things that I was not expecting to find as useful when I started subscribing to the New York Times was getting access to the entire archive.
Mm.
And so sometimes it's just fun to go, I wonder what the first mention of Star Trek was in the New York Times, or I wonder when, you know, this was first discussed, or when was this word first used? And it's kind of cool to jump back and see those firsts and, of course, to read any historical accounts the day after they happened or a few days after they happened. It's a very interesting thing to do if you have time.
Well, you know, I have to say this. I want to go take a look quick. I don't know if it's a replica of the pages or if it's have you gone to look in any of the actual issues that are linked here?
No, I just
I'm just going to grab one then. So I'm going to go to the Berkeley Daily Gazette and I'm going to say, it's an actual replica. So if you go in, and as I said, I'm in the Berkeley Daily Gazette, January 5th, 1914, so over 100 years ago. It is an actual full replica, scanned replica of the page. So it's not like, you know, they did OCR and just grabbed the text. Everything's there, images, ads, and that sort of thing. And what I was going to say is one of the things I find interesting is looking at ads. I mean, really old ads. So, you know, there's something here called Tokyo Cleaning Works. Men's suits, $1. Ladies' suits, $1 and up. So it costs more, apparently, due to ladies' suits in 1914. Fast electric trains from Pittsburgh to Sacramento. I don't think that's Pittsburgh, PA, though. I think that's, like, someplace nearer. But at any rate, fun stuff. Okay, well, that's going to be an enormous time sink, I know, someday. Okay, now this one is probably a quick news item, and it's probably of only interest to me. I don't think John cares. And that's Sprint wants to merge with Charter. But as is so often in life, Sprint wants Charter. Charter's going, meh.
You know, yeah.
It doesn't seem to be expressing much interest. So we'll see how that goes. Charter is a pretty big company now that it's purchased both Bright House and Time Warner Cable. So I think it's second largest national ISP behind Comcast right now and cable TV provider. So it's not exactly
a tiny company. Which also makes it second most evil.
That's true.
Yeah.
Sprint,
I think Charter's main selling point should just be we're not Comcast.
Mm.
That seems like it's a very good advertising slogan.
Of course, it doesn't matter because they don't overlap anywhere.
That's true.
Right?
But, you know, when you're considering where in the country to move,
yeah,
check to see where your ISP will be.
This is true. You know, I don't know how many times I've heard, and you know, people will move to someplace way out in the sticks here in Hawaii, and then they are shocked that they don't have good broad or any broadband. And mm-hmm. I asked them, did you just think of checking? You know, you are in the middle of nowhere. Your neighbor is like acres away. You've got an active volcano, you know, 4 miles away. Maybe this is someplace that doesn't have the kind of infrastructure you expected when you moved from New York City or something.
You mean volcanoes don't provide Wi-Fi hotspots?
Well, they're just hotspots.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah. You know, do check when you're going to move, what's available. And even there's some really odd things. Like, for example, I know one area on the Big Island, which doesn't have cable TV cable company provided broadband, but does have DSL. But because, you know, DSL is a kind of a dying technology from what I can tell, the ILEC there doesn't take new customers. So if you've got DSL service in that area, you know, you've got DSL service. But if you move in, including moving into a home that had DSL service when you bought the house, but, you know, that owner is probably taking that service with them, right? Or, you know, the phone number and the service with them. So disconnects it before they leave. You know, that's what you always do, right? You turn off the electricity, let the new owner, you know, get all those utilities, right? You cannot now get DSL in your new home, which just had DSL when the previous owner was there.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, don't know if it's still like that, but I knew that was happening as of a couple of years ago.
Hmm.
Yeah. So if you're moving anywhere, really, check to see what your landline or wireline, I should say, ISP service looks like, and check to see what your wireless service looks like. Do you have connectivity? I know John, I think John has lived in a few places where he had to switch providers or get an alternate a secondary provider or something like that.
Yeah. It's a pain. It's something you definitely want to look into before you move.
Yep. So literally stand in the house and turn on your phone, or if it's not on for some reason, and check to see if you've got signal. I know in my home I didn't do that. I didn't actually have AT&T when I moved to this house. But I got AT&T service years and years later, like many years later, like 10 years after we moved here probably, maybe more. And I discovered that I had no signal sitting on my couch in the middle of my home. So I'd have to go outside of the house about 25 feet south to get signal.
My problem in Shreveport when I lived there. I had been on T-Mobile for many, many years and not had a problem. And then I moved to Shreveport, and if I'm standing on my balcony in the apartment, no problem. Walk right in the door, close the door, bam, no signal. And I don't know what the deal was, because it literally went from – I wasn't living in a Faraday cage as far as I know. But that wood frame construction, man, it was really good wood, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's when I
switched to Verizon. Steel-laced wood, you know, the rare steel-laced wood.
Yeah, steel wood. So that's when I switched to Verizon, because I figured living in the South, I was going to be in a lot more – dead zone areas than I was living in New York City or living in Ohio, and that is true. There are places down here where I'm the only one that has service because I have Verizon. So you pay a premium, but Verizon does have the old crotchety network that is everywhere around here. So
well, and more importantly, they have the low frequency band. So whether the 900 megahertz band, and the rest of the folks are probably around 1700 or thereabouts. So less wall penetration power for the higher freaks. So at any rate, but I should say that AT&T put up a new tower nearby a couple of years ago, and that problem has disappeared. And for T-Mobile, well, for Google Fi for me now, but it can do a handoff over Wi-Fi, which solves a lot of problems too. And I think I told you the story of, this is actually, well, it's actually T-Mobile UK. When I was in the UK last year, visiting my daughter, we went up to the Isle of Skye in Scotland, and my daughter had service kind of barely. You know, she had Vodafone UK, and she had more or less service up there, but I essentially had no service in the Isle of Skye, in Portree, and But what I did have was a hotel room with Wi-Fi. And I actually got a call because I had a credit card fraudulent activity that the credit card company wanted to report to me. And the only reason I got that phone call from them over in Scotland, because Google Fi and T-Mobile UK can hand off phone calls over Wi-Fi if you're on Wi-Fi, which I was. So I was able to get the call and be notified and all that other good stuff. But, so Wi-Fi handoff for calls, awesome. Okay, next up. Hey, John, I wonder if John's frozen now.
Nope, I'm here.
Okay. Next up, John, you put in something about the death of Microsoft Paint. That sounds very sad.
It does, and that's what I was led to believe until, thankfully, you had actually read about it. I had just heard all the headlines, and I do so much prep work for this podcast. And I thought about it, I thought, well, that can't be right. And sure enough, it is a little bit overblown. Microsoft Paint, which, as Todd and I joked before the podcast, got its last major revision about 10 years ago when it was able to open up JPEGs.
Yeah.
Is going to be taken out of Windows and put into the App Store. You can download it if you'd like. This is kind of what Apple's been doing with things, taking them out of iOS and putting them into the App Store if you want them. Right. I think it's just kind of the newer generation of OS ideas. You know, just don't put in stuff that not everyone wants when you have an App Store that can easily get it out. And you can also push updates a lot easier that way too. But I like your advice, Todd, because this is the advice I would honestly give if I had a device that didn't have MS Paint.
Yeah, and my advice is, even if you have Microsoft Paint, don't use it, because it's really not very good. It's
primitive.
Basically 30-year-old technology that hasn't been updated except to, you know, new file format every now and then. Use Paint.net, which actually was funded by Microsoft, whose development. I think there was an intern or somebody, a kid from like UW or something, that was working at Microsoft for the summer, and he got this. Or you know, there's some kind of student project, and they developed Paint.net, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. It's a free app for Microsoft Windows, and it has been updated regularly for many, many years. I don't know how that person does it, probably in his or her free time. But I think you go to getpaint.net. Don't go to paint.net. Go to getpaint.net. Getpaint is one word. And you can download it for free. I've used it for many years on my various PCs, and it has been great.
Yep, there's always other alternatives, things like GIMP if you want to use that. So,
yeah, although some people can't get used to GIMP's multi-window. I think it's got a tiled, not a tiled, but I think it's got an MDI, not MDI, what the heck would you call it? An all-in-one window.
Oh, okay.
Interface.
That would be, I'm trying to remember in the old parlance of SDI, MDI, that would be.
But the thing that bothered it had a very, I don't know, like an X window kind of design. And so your menu would be in a window and your help would be in another window. And the actual drawing surface would be a window and the color palette would be a window. And they would overlap, and it's confusing to Windows users because Windows users are used to having everything in one windowed pane. But yeah, GIMP is super powerful. It does have a steeper learning curve than Paint.net, in my opinion.
Oh, yes. That is very true.
Yeah. And GIMP is open source, last I checked. What I did want to mention, though, is Microsoft, too, has a history of moving stuff out of the shipping product. And the one that comes to mind is Solitaire and Minesweeper, the two, you know, probably mm-hmm. two most well-known games for Microsoft Windows because it can't ship with it. But you can't say it's because they wanted to decruftify it, because they then started to put in things like Candy Crush, which they don't even own, I think. I think that's a third party. So Windows ships with Candy Crush, but not just Solitaire and Minesweeper anymore. You can, however, download multiple versions of Solitaire from the Microsoft App Store. I'm not sure about Minesweeper. I would assume you can. I'm gonna
this is almost launching me into a mini rant about the game known as Bejeweled, because that's the basis of Candy Crush, and it just seems like every friggin' app that you find that's in the game section of any app store, it really boils down to a Bejeweled knockoff. And I hate Bejeweled, but I figure someone wrote a really good library for it once and licensed it very reasonably, and now everyone just uses it because it seems like whenever I'm playing one game that isn't Bejeweled, I'll have ads in it for other games that are all basically skinned Bejeweled.
What is – okay, I kind of remember Bejeweled, but how does the game work?
You have a grid of different colored things. You have to connect three in a row by doing a swap motion, then those go away, taking with them any that are similar colors. So, yeah, that's it in a nutshell. But that's the way Candy Crush runs. And for some reason, I just never found that game all that interesting.
I've never played Candy Crush.
Yeah, me neither.
Or Bejeweled, apparently.
I just eat candy. I don't crush it.
That said, I do like games, and I'm still sad about my favorite game going to disappear from iOS soon. And that's Sid Meier's Civilization Revolution. And I keep pounding on this. This is going to sound like my spot watch pretty soon. When the time comes for it to die, when iOS 11 emerges and it stops working. I get messages all the time now when I play the game. I'm trying to play it. I guess I could take my old iPad 2 back from my wife. Since I can't get iOS 11, and I hope she still has Civilization Revolution on it, give her the iPad 3 that my daughter is going to leave at home when she goes back to grad school. I bought her an iPad Mini 4 to take to school with her. She didn't. I asked her if she wanted a Pro, by the way, and she said no, so she went with the Mini. But speaking of going back to school, you have some advice for back to school students and parents?
Well, back-to-school geeks, too. So students and parents, they tend to be the ones that like back-to-school time because they've got, the parents are happy to get kids back out of the house sometimes, and kids are happy to get all the cool new stuff, and geeks should be very happy about some of the things you can pick up really, really cheap this time of year that you might not otherwise think to pick up. So today I was at Walmart, which had a very expensive back-to-school section, and I picked up six of these little pencil boxes. They're not very big, but they're plastic Sterilite boxes, and they're 97 cents each.
Good price.
They're the perfect size, like the one I have right now has all of my wired headphones, small adapters, and USB wall warts in it. Labeled,
I assume.
Oh, yes. I've been using my label maker this afternoon to label these things up. And that makes it a lot easier to organize drawers, desk drawers. And if you have storage crates and stuff, one giant crate with a bunch of random stuff in it, you can actually have these little boxes. I know in one of my boxes over here, I have a soldering iron, which I hardly ever use. But when I do need it, it's nice to have it all in one little place.
Right. Pro tip. For those of you who are planning to do what John does, I assume these are plastic boxes. When you use your soldering iron, let it cool before you put it back in the plastic box.
Very good pro tip. Let your soldering iron cool off before you melt your box.
Unless you want to melt your box.
Yeah.
And ruin your soldering iron.
But there's not just little boxes that you can pick up. Dorm room organization stuff sometimes can be really cool at this time of year and also very cheap. So, for example, the keychain or the key ring that my wife and I have used for many years, one of them I use and she's used it continuously, was one of these little multi keychains where you can press a little lever and release the keychain with a few keys on it. And then add and remove keys real easy. She's used that forever. That was a back-to-school Target special. I think you got two of those for like $3 or something like that in their dorm section. I've bought little signs for my office door in the past, little notepads or dry erase boards. Those are very cheap this time of year. So if you're stuck helping someone shop for back-to-school, take a look. You might find something that would be very useful. Desk lamps also go on sale. So if you need a little desk lamp for, working on stuff, or just a lamp to focus light on where you're working with small electronics or something like that, you can pick them up much cheaper this time of year than any other time by about at least, 50 to 60%.
That's pretty significant.
And I just think nobody really thinks about it. You don't really think, you know, back to school time is the time to get office organization stuff. But it really is.
Yeah. And okay, so pro tip for parents sending their freshmen, college freshmen students off in the next couple of weeks. I don't know if I would say many, but I would say at least colleges I know about often organize a shopping trip for these kids. Where they take them on a bus to a store at like midnight, like a midnight sale thing just for the college students. And they can buy, you know, the various things that kids need when they move into a dorm for the first time that they may have not brought from home, like sheets that fit. You know, because sometimes college dorms have these really odd sized beds that you cannot find sheets and things to fit. So check with your school, check with your student's school to see if they have such a shopping trip organized and take advantage of that. And it's a good way for the kids to get to know each other and stuff, too. So,
and as a college professor, the back-to-school advice I can give you, if this is the first time you've sent your child off to college, if they're your freshman and you are hoping that they'll do all right, let them do what they're going to do. Try to give them some independence. Let them handle some problems. That's what they need to be doing, especially at the beginning of school. And there are – every college I know of, and as someone who works in this area at my university, there are systems in place for them to get help. If they have questions, they can ask people. Sometimes they will call you and tell you, there's no one here that'll help me. I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And if you ask, who did you talk to? The sheepish reply will be, well, no one yet. But could you call and find out? Let them do some of that exploring. It's their time to do it. And the freshman year is the best time to do that exploring. Don't think, well, I'll help them in the fall because it's their first time there, and then I'll gradually lighten up over the spring and then the next year, because they'll just keep calling and asking for you to help. So
yeah, they're called – those kind of parents are called helicopter parents because they hover around their kids, and they are a danger.
That is one version of them. Helicopter parents, though – are not as bad as the steamrolling parents.
Oh, my goodness.
The ones that will just plow through any block. And unfortunately, a helicopter parent can usually get a college to work with them. The steamrolling parents are usually the ones that are calling us and asking us for things that we just can't talk about. You know, things like, well, what is my son's grade in your class? I can't tell you that. Sorry. Yeah. That's between your son and the university, and they're going to have to sign off if they want you to be able to know those pieces of information.
Well, you know, I have to say, I never ever saw my daughter's report card.
That's because we don't actually have report cards anymore.
Yeah, I guess so.
No school I know of actually.
Yeah, you know, online, whatever heck grade thing they have. I never looked at it. All I ever told her was, well, you know, you have a partial scholarship, and if that disappears, I'll know what happened.
Yeah, exactly. If your financial aid is problematic, then I will know that something happened. I had a student this week who came in and wasn't all that prepared for the challenge of college last year, and the email I got this week was, how many classes do I have to take to get my GPA back up so I can get financial aid?
Oh, no.
And it was not a small number of classes that had to be taken to get it back up. So.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, but, well, this is not the College Views podcast, but since John is an expert of sorts at this, and I am a parent, well, actually, I am a parent, not a parent of sorts. But I should say that that was 4 years ago, and my daughter was a freshman, so. You know,
well, you know, as the person who coordinates our first year seminar program at our university, where I get to work with pretty much all the incoming freshmen in some way or another, or they're learning through a curriculum that I designed and all that. I feel like a parent too many times. I usually take all the group photos every year and put together a big picture and a collage.
Because
we really do care about your kids as much as you care about them, because we want them to succeed. So. Nice.
So, okay, so good advice for parents. At least that's the advice I would give to parents with incoming freshmen. And John sees, well, a whole class every year, I guess. And so he has even more experience from that other side of the incoming freshmen. He actually sees them. I funny story. So when my daughter went to her study abroad semester last two springs ago, spring of 2016, One of the rules at that it was at Keele University in the UK, in England, was that you drop your student off at Heathrow Airport, and you don't come. And by that I mean they have a chartered bus that picks them up at Heathrow, and buses them up to Keele, and you don't come. You leave them alone here. Let them be. Which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting sort of thing, and I understand completely how it can be very scary to let them go, but yeah. It's definitely time to.
Okay, so if there's one back-to-school deal that you would recommend to people, what would you recommend?
Well, not only what I just talked about with different organization containers, yep, and things like that, but also if you are a student or if you're a parent of a student, check out educational discounts on software.
Oh, good one.
Be looking for that. As soon as you get that .edu address, a lot of places open up educational discounts, and so you'll want to keep an eye out for those.
Yeah, and I'll give you one I know for sure, is my daughter needed to run Windows. Her program specifically requires that you run Microsoft Office for Windows, not Microsoft Office for Mac. And so she's a Mac user, and I said, well, I guess we'll have to go buy you a virtual machine kind of software. So I bought her Parallels, which I used many, 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 many years ago, like over 10 years ago. And it was available for 50% off if you have a .edu address. So that was a really good deal. And Windows, unfortunately, I had to pay full list, but whatever. And also the other pro tip for parents is your university or college may offer software like Office 365 as part of the tuition package. In other words, you don't, yep, pay anything. So, you know, don't go ahead and buy the – there's a great education deal if you want. It's $79 for 4 years, which would carry somebody all the way through college if they graduate on time. But if it's free from your college, that's even better. So check on that before you buy things like Microsoft Office 365, because you could save yourself a bit of money. You know, basically at least $70 a year if you did the personal edition, or $80 if you bought the university edition. But, you know, money is money. Mm-hmm. So you can go ahead and save that. I'm trying to think what other things they might do for you. You know, they'll set up the email and things like that. So check with your college. Yep. It's very different from when I went, where email didn't exist, computers didn't exist, cars didn't. We had stone tablets and chisels. It was, mm-hmm, boy, you talk about writing a term paper. That was just painful. You know, with hammering, and you get the tunnel from the hammer. It's pretty bad.
Every so often, a dinosaur would wander by and just break the tablet.
It's awful. Yeah. Yeah. It was terrible times. And, you know, that whole, you know, studying by candlelight. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no electricity.
And if the last scribe that had written the textbook fell asleep, you might be missing a whole chapter. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. All right. So I guess our farewell to the iPad and iPod. And I keep saying iPad. And our back-to-school edition comes to an end, thanks to John. I think John's going to have a 2-week hiatus as he does stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he actually has stuff to do.
I have a conference, a wedding, and then the week after, ironically, I will be at work working with incoming peer mentors that are working in our program. So
awesome.
I'll be having a retreat day for them on Saturday and Sunday. So
very, very important work. I may try to recruit some of our mutual friends to fill in for John while he's away on his not-so-secret mission,
mm-hmm,
for the next 2 weeks. So we'll see you. We'll see you definitely in 3 weeks, and we'll see if I can convince a friend or two to join me in the next 2 weeks if our schedules work out. And that's always a problem, because John and I fortunately have schedules that generally sync at least several times a month. So it's been,
mm-hmm,
a real pleasure. I will see you in 3 weeks, John. Have fun.
Yep. I will see you then.
And we'll talk to you later.